Last week, President Biden announced that the Port of Los Angeles is joining the Port of Long Beach in moving to expanded 24/7 operations. And this is to ease the effects of America's supply chain crisis ahead of the holiday season.
So by increasing the number of late night hours of operation and opening up for less crowded hours when the goods can move faster, today's announcement has the potential to be a game changer.
Now, ports and shipping containers aren't exactly heart-thumping headline news, but they are foundational to the history of the United States. Remember the Boston Tea Party? Here's a little refresher from Schoolhouse Rock, circa 1975.
He even has the nerve to tax our cup of tea. To put it kindly, King, we really don't agree. Gonna show you how we feel, we're gonna dump this tea. Turn this harbor into the biggest cup of tea in history.
Now, supply chains aren't just the star of the 18th century founding. They're the main character in 20th century economic growth. And the biggest star of all, the Panama Canal. In 1902, President Teddy Roosevelt bet his legacy on carving out a passage to connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The Panama Canal opened for business in 1914, and when it did, it elevated the U.S. to the dominant commercial and military power of the Western Hemisphere. It is not an exaggeration to understand the Panama Canal as the very core of the U.S. geopolitical strategy in the 20th century. Billions of dollars in goods pass through the intricate lock system, speeding global supply chains and the movement of military assets. And to date, about $270 billion worth of goods pass through the canal every single year. It provides passageway for over 80 countries. It represents 5% of the world's trade. And tolls account for 80% of the revenue generated. The lesson of all this might seem obvious. Get those ports open! Hashtag thanks Joe Biden. But what this heroic tale of the canal ignores is that opening up the supply chain and ports had real costs as well. Costs that were shouldered disproportionately by the least powerful. Let's go back to that early 20th century moment, because present-day Panama, at that time, was part of Colombia, and Colombia had no intention of allowing Roosevelt access. So Roosevelt did what any problem solver would do. He generated global capital to fund a revolution in Colombia, destabilize the government, and allow the U.S. to seize the land that is now Panama. Wild, right? Then, after carving out the strategically placed new nation, Roosevelt got Panama to sign over control of the canal and its revenue. Now we paid for it, but it was a paltry sum compared to the riches the canal would produce over the course of the next century. The canal cost Panamanians hundreds of millions of dollars, and multiple estimates suggest that upward of 25,000 people lost their lives due to disease and unsafe working conditions. The overwhelming majority of those workers were Black West Indian laborers. Now, there have been ongoing tensions around the basic rights and living conditions for Panamanians, as well as accusations of discrimination against the labor force in the canal zone. In 1964, Panamanians protested after the U.S. denied them the right to fly their flag next to the American flag.
It seemed that violence just had to occur in Panama, and now it has occurred. There are pockets of it throughout the city.
In 1977, President Jimmy Carter signed the Panama Canal Treaty, and it agreed to release control of the canal zone to the nation of Panama in 1999.
And by guaranteeing the neutrality of the Panama Canal, the treaties also serve the best interest of every nation that uses the canal.
Now, the canal continues to fuel 21st century global commerce. And in 2016, just over 100 years after it first opened, the canal was expanded. And with these huge new ships making their way through, there's more pressure on local ports to accommodate them. That means more money for infrastructure, the requirement of raising bridges, expanding port accessibility, and of course, a workforce required to make all of it run. Now, Americans are sighing in relief that Christmas will be saved by the 24/7 operations in Southern California ports. But the story of the Panama Canal leads us to ask, what are the costs to communities where those ports are located? Now, let's go to present-day California, This month, the Biden administration has moved to open the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach for 24/7 operations. And it's a policy change intended to address the nationwide supply chain disruptions that have been taking place during the pandemic. And it's likely to make a real difference, given that about 40% of the goods imported to the U.S. through shipping containers, well, they go through these ports. But many environmental and health advocates say that these business decisions don't account for the interests of vulnerable California residents.
We have now a situation where the ports are being asked to function at maximum capacity that they can 24 hours a day. I'm Dr. Afif El Hassan. I am a pediatrician and I'm a spokesperson for the American Lung Association as well. The very fact that you're dealing with nonstop pollution day and night in those areas is very concerning, and it's going to have an adverse effect on the communities, and it's just a bad public health risk.
According to Dr. El Hassan, past environmental regulations did actually minimize the pollution coming out of the ports, but only temporarily.
The regulations that were put into place actually did start to improve the air. And we were seeing better air quality in the area. But as there was increase in the amount of goods coming through the area, which includes traffic, includes the ships themselves and their air pollution, and the increase in the number of warehouses and other facilities that have been built to accommodate the increased flow of goods through the area, we're starting to see increased air pollution in the area of the port.
So in order to balance the supply chain needs with environmental concerns, we need some big picture solutions.
More electric vehicles, making sure that ships that are waiting to unload cargo and are near the coast are practicing ways in which they minimize the air pollution that they contribute to these communities. And all that needs to be done at the same time and needs to be part of the solution when we decide how we're going to accommodate the increased needs for getting these goods distributed.
But at the moment, Dr. El Hassan says that we're heading down a dangerous road by focusing on business needs first.
We cannot set a precedent where the economy ever takes priority over the health of people in this country. What affects one community will eventually affect all of us. It will affect us either because the air pollution is not going to sit in those communities, it's going to go everywhere, and it's going to hurt all of us to some degree. And we all are going to start paying for the extra health care needed if we've decided that certain communities are worth allowing to have detrimental health because we need those goods so badly.
Can you kind of put that down where the goats can get it for us and make it clear to me? What are some of the changes? What are some of the things that change in day-to-day operations or in the tools and techniques that you are using?
And that's a great question, Melissa. And there's drastic changes. So our goal here at the Southern California Port Complex, otherwise known as the San Pedro Bay Complex, is to be zero emission with regard to all cargo handling equipment by year 2030. And to be zero emission with regard to all container trucks that come in and out of port. Now, frankly, the 2035 goal for trucks, I think we're going to get there a lot quicker. We already have demonstration projects with regard to electric trucks, and you know, hydrogen fuel trucks is coming down the line. So I think in the next 5 years, it's going to be a substantial progress with regard to those goals.
Now, I want to also understand a bit more about this move to 24/7. I know that you met with earlier this month with President Biden, and I'm wondering what policies you all discussed about this transition.
Well, number one, again, this is a national crisis, if not a global crisis. I'm talking about the disruption of the supply chain. And I think your listeners and viewers, we could all have stories about what we don't have, what are we waiting to get in this Amazon state of mind era. I'm talking about the whole issue of e-commerce. But suffice to say that I think whether it's in the business community or in the consumer sector, these cargoes have to be delivered to the shelf. And that's the dynamic that we have right now that we're trying to address. So, and let's not forget that the Biden administration, I think it's for all our environmentalists, including I put myself in that classification, there is no administration who has come with such a proactive policy to address climate change, zero emission infrastructure. So with that, again, we got to keep in mind the perspective here in terms of dealing with a national crisis. And at the same time, what Long Beach has been able to prove, and Los Angeles, the Port of LA, is we can grow our business and grow green. We've done it, we've proven it, and the excitement, as I mentioned, the drastic difference it's going to have here in the coming decade, if not sooner, is the substantial move towards zero emission transportation truck movement here.
Now, talk to me a little bit about jobs. You know, even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago, you know, the story would have been, all right, how many more jobs is this going to create? But these days, it feels like there's a labor shortage. So I guess I want to know both how many more jobs it's going to create, but also, are you going to have enough workers to fill them?
Well, the supply chain does have challenges. And I'm talking about the warehouses, the truck drivers. Now, with regard to the port here, the dock workers, we have enough labor here. Thankful to the IOWU and the men and women in that union who are been working and moving this cargo day in, day out since this pandemic commenced. Let's not forget that spring of 2020, we were all affected. Things like paper towels that you ordinarily you depend on, as a simplistic example, you couldn't even get. So now, of course, the reason is we're trying to move so we don't get back into that situation. But again, as to the shortage of labor, this industry is not immune from the shortage of labor in all industries right now. The crisis, which is another factor in this crisis that we're going through in this nation.
So we've talked a little bit about emissions and about air pollution. I'm wondering also about noise and light, and just whether or not moving to 24/7. So again, for those of us who don't live near a port, right, to understand sort of you know, how much noisier might it be? How many more trucks on the road? Or are you all using service roads? And are you far enough away from neighborhoods and communities that that won't have much of an impact?
Well, number one, I think benefits of zero emission, in addition to air quality, is noise. Because again, for the Port of Long Beach, 15% of our cargo handling equipment today is zero emission. And when you talk about electric trucks and zero emission trucks, and again, the question is, let's not depend on diesel or petrol anymore. We cannot move forward with that kind of a model, and we're not. So I think as in terms of lighting, the Port of Long Beach has had a proactive policy with regard to LED lighting in the port complex. In the Harbor District itself, where we have control of the lighting, that has changed to LED. And of course, we're working with our terminals, many of them, who've already are moving towards LED lighting in the terminals.
Now, this is maybe my, and maybe this isn't a decided fact yet, or maybe it is. You know, obviously across the world, many ports operate on a 24/7 basis already. So I know that what has driven this is the global supply chain crisis, the COVID-19 crisis. But is this a permanent move? So is Port of Long Beach now into not just the medium term future, but the foreseeable future going to be a 24/7 operation?
Well, we need to move to a model of extended gates of operation. And I think if you ask any truck driver that does this work, they're tired of waiting 2 or 3 hours to get into a terminal to pick up the cargo. So we need to address that issue of efficiency. So the model of 24/7, when you move 20 million TEU containers, Melissa, here at the Southern California Port Complex, you cannot move that kind of cargo with the model of yesterday. So needless to say, we're trying to accommodate not only consumers, but the business interests here. And again, what we're seeing here is a monumental demand of products, durable goods. And again, California is a state of 40 million people. And of course, when you talk about the region and all the cargo that goes back east, it's quite an amount that you cannot move in standard hours of operation.
Thank you so much to Mario Cordero, who is executive director of the Port of Long Beach. And this year, we might just have to call you Santa Claus. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Thank you for having me.